Blog Talk Radio.
Appropriate or proper.
Even the Webster's Dictionary, Mr. Rolkowski quotes in his news report, doesn't define suitable as common. It defines suitable as proper, able, or qualified, and gives examples such as the dress was a suitable choice. Well, what could be more suitable to a family with a yard than teaching children how to grow some of their own food right at home? That's suitable. It's the most suitable and natural thing in the world, in fact. What's weird is to grow nothing but grass and then spray your lawn with toxic chemicals to kill all the weeds, and then mow the lawn every week, burning up fossil fuels and polluting the air just to keep your lawn manicured. Now that's bizarre and terrible for city air quality, by the way. Gardening, on the other hand, is eco-friendly, healthy-friendly, and great for the air quality of the city. What could be more suitable to a city than people growing more of their own food right at home, right on their own front lawns? To be an opponent of home gardening is to be an enemy of the environment, an enemy of food freedom, an enemy of self-reliance, and an opponent of the rights of people to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. I agree. I love gardening. Mr. Kevin Rolkowski, who can't even get his dictionary definition straight, maintains his arrogance. I told her don't do it, and she went ahead and did it anyway. As if Julie Bass is somehow supposed to grovel at this bureaucrat's parasite's feet and lick his boots because he pretends to be in a position of authority. Kevin Rolkowski is like every other mindless bureaucratic tyrant running around America or any other country. They are useless parasites on society who actually harm people while collecting public dollars as their own wage. The city of Oak Park, Michigan, would be better served by firing this anti-gardening PR disaster before he gets bright ideas such as banning fruit trees or edible flowers. As a spokesperson for the city of Oak Park, the guy is a shining example of how not to conduct public relations.
He also just looks kind of heartless and mean, you know, as if he's been living on processed junk food and hot dogs. I guess for a paper-pushing bureaucrat whipcracker, this guy does not like him. That's a suitable diet, eh? But growing your own food isn't suitable in all this, in his mind. Of course, he's perfectly fine with pavement, lots of pavement. You can't have living vegetables in your front yard, but you can pave the entire yard. And he's fine. He's fine with that. So now Julie Bass is facing a jury trial and possible jail time for daring to stand up to the tyranny of miscreants like Kevin Rolkowski. The trial begins in a couple of weeks, and the outcome remains in doubt. If you haven't already, watch this video on Natural News TV to get the full story. I think we'll play this.
See what that has to say. We couldn't get it last night.
Yeah. Let's see if it comes up tonight. Here we go.
She faces 93 days in jail.
That's insane.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah. It's starting up here, folks. A little slow.
An Oak Park woman goes before a judge. Her crime? Growing vegetables in her yard.
Turns out that a veggie garden in front of the house is against the city code. Fox News' Alexis Wiley reports.
The price of organic food is kind of through the roof.
So why not grow your own?
These are pepper plants. This one is a jalapeno. You can see there's a little baby jalapeno right here, which is super cute and one of our favorites.
But Julie Bass's garden is a little unique because it's in her front yard.
We thought it would be really cool to do it so the neighbors could see. The kids love it. The kids from the neighborhood all come and help.
But Julie's cool garden has landed her in hot water with the city of Oak Park. Code enforcement gave her a warning, then a ticket, and now she's been charged with a misdemeanor.
I think it's sad that the city of Oak Park, that's already strapped for cash, is paying a lot of money to have a prosecutor bothering us.
That's not what we want to see in our front yard.
Why? Well, the city is pointing to a code that says a front yard has to have suitable live plant material. But here's the big question. What's suitable?
Do you think that this is suitable live plant material?
It's definitely live. It's definitely plant. It's definitely material. We think it's suitable.
Why is this not suitable?
Well, if you look at the definition of what suitable is in Webster's Dictionary, it'll say common. So if you look around and you look at any other community, what's common to a front yard is a nice grass yard with beautiful trees and bushes and flowers.
But when you look at front yards like this and this, is Julie's vegetable garden really worth the city's time and money? What do you say to those who say, this is ridiculous?
Why, I would argue that you won't find that opinion for most people on part.
That's ridiculous.
I have a bunch of little children that when we take walks to come by and see everything growing. I think it's a very wonderful thing for our neighborhood.
They don't have nothing else to do. They're going to take it to court for a garden.
Well, we did find one neighbor who wasn't a fan. So you think it needs to go?
I do. I know there's a backyard. Do it in the backyard.
They say, you know, why should you grow things in the front? Well, why shouldn't I? They're fine. They're pretty. They're well-maintained.
It looks like this critical debate is headed for a jury trial, and neither side is backing down.
I could sell out and save my own self and just not have them bother me anymore, but then there's no telling what they're going to harass the next person about.
Now, there's another pretrial scheduled for July 26th. The next step could be a jury trial. In Oak Park, I'm Alexis Wiley, Fox 2 News.
So
there you have it.
If you're interested in this at all, I say that please go to naturalnews.com and check this out, and tells you how to write to these
and support,
yeah,
this,
support
lady,
this lady,
Julie Bass.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Action item: sign on the online petition. The petition is www.thepetitionsite.com/1/OA.
Well, the best thing to do is go to the article.
And then complain loudly to Kevin Rolkowski, the condescending bully city planner in the video. His phone number, and I'll state it, is 248-691-7450. Or email him at crulkowski@ci.oak/park.mi.us.
The best thing to do is to go to this
natural news, and you can do that.
naturalnews.com. Yeah.
So,
and you can find the article, Julie Bass.
Pretty bizarre.
In a garden.
This was another one I wanted to talk about tonight, and two of them. But China faces a severe water crisis due to massive food production. I thought that was bizarre.
What's that all about?
Yeah. As the world production increases.
As the world's population.
Population, yeah. So too does its need for food and water, the two resources which are absolutely necessary to sustain life. And as it happens, one is needed to grow the other, so it should. But let me just go to that, because I think this is really interesting. And
it happens, one is needed to grow the other, so
it
should alarm you to know that the country with the largest population, China, is running out of water, according to some experts, which will dramatically affect its ability to feed its 1.3 billion people. The Asian giant has been warned by one of its own groundwater experts to either cut its food production or else face dire water levels, especially in the dry Northwest Plains. If not, aquifers will sink to dire levels not seen in 30 years. The government must adopt a new policy to reduce water consumption, said Zheng Chumao, director of the Water Research Center at Peking University, in an interview with Britain's Guardian newspaper. The main thing is to reduce demand. We have relied too much on engineering projects, but the government realizes this is not a long-term solution, he added. But how does a country the size of China reduce demand, especially during a period of rapid economic growth, when the country is modernizing at a pace never seen before, unless you physically eliminate the number of mouths to feed? Beijing can't credibly reduce demand.
The water situation in the North China Plain does not allow much longer for irrigation, he added. We need to reduce food production, even though it's politically difficult. It would be much more economical to import. That's not a popular prospect for a nation struggling to emerge from centuries of second-class status. And yet, according to Zhang's estimates, That may be the only choice to avoid mass starvation. He says the country has to increasingly rely on underground water sources to meet its demand. 70% of it now comes from underground, he says. That has had a dramatic effect on a number of aquifers, many of which are emptying at an alarming rate. In the meantime, the government plans to implement efficiency measures, but few think that is anything but a stopgap measure. That's because usage is occurring faster than a replenishment.
Ooh.
Yeah. In and around Xifeng City in northern China, farmers have had to delay harvesting crops to avoid injury because fields are so dry they have developed cracks up to 32 feet deep. Holy cow. In fact, the city's water bureau says 62% of its 51 reservoirs have run dry, leaving more than 250,000 people short of water.
Wow.
And the problem is spreading. In fact, hundreds of Chinese cities are facing water shortages. Swelling numbers of Chinese can now afford piped water, private bathrooms and washing machines, homes and garden, cars that need washing, and more food, which needs growing. Buying power has also led to a growing number of golf courses and ski resorts that use man-made snow. Why is China's water shortage a big deal? Because a nation as powerful as China will find a way to secure enough water for its needs. And Beijing is not about to take a step backward in its development. In the future, as fresh water becomes more scarce, wars will be fought over it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, it's pretty frightening. It is pretty frightening. So anyway, that's
something to think about.
Yeah, really, it's quite frightening. So there's quite a few more articles I wanted to read, and we'll come back to natural news.
If we have time at the end.
Yeah. Here, this is another thing that I was gonna. It's on another website, but this is quite frightening.
TSA lied. Agency still molesting young children after promising officials it would stop.
Right. After twice announcing that full-body pat-downs would no longer apply to children under 12 years of age, John Pistol, administrator of the U.S. Transportation and Security Administration, has officially been exposed as a liar. Just last week, the TSA molested and terrorized a 6-year-old boy en route to Disneyland with his parents, which caused the boy to cry and say to his parents that he no longer wanted to go on the trip. And back in November, Pistoli made an appearance on NBC Today Show in an attempt to quell outcry about the TSA's invasive new procedure. In that time, he stated that the agency heard the concerns that have been expressed and agreed that children under 12 should not receive that pat-down. After making this announcement, however, the TSA continued to grope young children anyway, including the infamous pat-down of an 8-month-old baby at Kansas City International Airport.
What's wrong with these people?
These people are sick.
Again in June, after being called upon by Congress to address the discrepancy between his statements and what was actually taking place, Pistoli made another announcement concerning young children receiving pat-downs, except this time he insinuated that they would in fact still be receiving them. However, he added a quip that repeated efforts would be made not necessarily to have to use pat-downs on young children, whatever that means. These statements were made before lawmakers in the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. So after first announcing that pat-downs would not apply to young children, Pistoli continued to allow them anyway. Then roughly 8 months later, Pistoli changed his story in response to further outcry and claimed that young children would still be subjected to pat-downs if they triggered screening anomalies or other security concerns, which represents a complete contradiction to his initial statements about pat-downs. Even Pistoli's most recent statements have been shown to be false, as an innocent young boy flying out of Washington's SeaTac Airport near Seattle was recently fondled by a TSA agent after passing problem 3 through the X-ray screening machine. Even though there were no screening anomalies or other security concerns, agents decided to target the young boy and later claimed that they did so because he was carrying a harmless video game device.
They just treated him like a terrorist. said the boy's father, Alex Long, to King 5 News in Seattle. He's a 6-year-old boy. The family has filed an official complaint against the agency for gross violation. And based on the false statements he twice made before lawmakers and once in front of the entire world concerning pat-downs of children, Pistoli can legitimately be charged for perjury and obstruction of justice, according to a recent InfoWars report. We can only hope that somebody actually will, and that justice will be served. And, man, this is one sick son of a bitch, I mean, to be doing this stuff, you know? And, to kids. And there was one other I wanted
about
to...
About what they did to that old lady.
Yeah.
With the Depends.
Oh, that was really sick. That was really sick. There was one other I wanted to read here that happened. That's the one there. But there was another one where a woman from Tennessee, her daughter was groped. And her young daughter. And
there's a thing on groping.
Yeah.
Outraged by repeated attempts over TSA groping. That must be it.
No.
No?
Where was this? Where's TSA? Showdown for TSA groping bill is set to take center stage in the Texas House today, with the Senate version of the bill up for a vote in this special session if the legislature hurdles towards its deadline by midnight tonight. Now, this was June 29th. I don't know if it happened. However, despite reports that the wording of the House bill will be identical to Senator Dan Patrick's SB 29,
which, while significantly weakened,
does offer some token resistance to TSA abuse. Patrick himself wrote on his Facebook last night that the House has refused to accept his bill. And instead, they passed a resolution speaking out on TSA policy, referring to a toothless proclamation that merely calls on Congress at the level, national level, to ensure acceptable treatment of public by personnel of the Transportation Administration. Meanwhile, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram reports that the measure will be up for a vote today is Patrick's Senate-passed measure, contradiction of Patrick's own statement. And whatever the language of the final House version, if there is to be a House version at all, Representative David Wilson will need 120 members out of a 150-member House to show up and vote. This is in Texas.
Yeah.
That this was happening. But this isn't the one that I had. There's another one here somewhere. I'd be angry that I couldn't find. This is the most recent. This, a woman in Tennessee, whose daughter was groped. No, it was very good because it was the most recent thing. Here we go. Mom arrested after refusing TSA molestation of daughter.
This is by Kurt Nemo.
Yep. Go ahead. You want to read that?
Yeah. Andrea Fornella Abbott of Clarksville, Tennessee, was arrested by Nashville Airport authorities after she refused to let the TSA fondle her daughter. Abbott said she did not want her daughter to be touched inappropriately or have her crotch grabbed, according to a police report. Her outrage at the security procedure landed her in jail. She was charged with disorderly conduct and released on bond, according to the Tennessean. She told me in a very stern voice with quite a bit of attitude that they were not going through the x-ray, Sabrina Birish, an airport security officer, told police. Abbott was told by the woman that naked body porno scanners are 10,000 times safer than your cell phone and uses the same type of radio waves as a sonogram. Earlier this month, it was revealed that the TSA, under the guidance of the Department of Homeland Security, deliberately misled the public on health risks associated with the naked body scanners. The electronic Privacy Information Center published documents released under a Freedom of Information Act that showed that the TSA has been caught covering up a growing number of cases of cancer among TSA airport body scanner operators who conduct the screenings in close proximity to the radiation-emitting devices. Despite the baseless assurance that the devices say, Abbott told Burr she did not want her daughter's naked body revealed by the scanner. She attempted to take cell phone video of the incident but was prevented from doing so. In April, the TSA defended its serial molestation procedures after a video surfaced showing agents fondling a six-year-old girl at the New Orleans airport. The TSA has admitted that fondling children is government policy. Some folks are asking if the proper procedures were followed. Yes, TSA has reviewed the incident, and security officers in the video followed the current standard operating procedures, a TSA spokesman explained on the agency's official blog.
So it's okay
because
to fondle a six-year-old girl.
Or anybody.
It's a sick, sick world. You can get this one from Infowars.com. You can check this this one out. Let's see. I wanted to do some, let's see, what was this? Hang on 1 second here. I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about the Flotilla, okay, activists,
Turned away.
But on July 11th, which was yesterday, Sunday, Flotilla activists go on hunger strike. International activists have gone on hunger strike in two Israeli detention centers after being arrested at the Tel Aviv region, regime for
attempting to enter occupied
Palestinian
territories. Dozens of Welcome to Palestine activists went on hunger strike on Monday in protest against their incarceration under stringent conditions in Israeli jails. A Press TV correspondent reported the strike comes 3 days after Israeli forces arrested them at Tel Aviv's Ben-Gurion Airport.
I'm just going to go through this here. Where is that? Dozens of went on hunger strike. Flotilla was organized. The activists had flown to Israel and had sought to head to the Palestinian territories on a peaceful mission to visit Palestinian families. The flotilla was organized in protest at a flotilla of ships being prevented by Greece from sailing to the Gaza Strip in a bid to break the Israeli blockade on Palestinian territory. Minors and elderly persons with medical conditions are reportedly among the activists. Hikmat al-Sabti, 57, of Rostock, Germany, for instance, is being denied much-needed medication, and his wife has not been allowed to speak with him directly. The activists are currently being held in prisons in Beersheba, in southern Israel, and Ramea, near Tel Aviv. Most of the activists being held are French, but nationals from the United States, Belgium, Bulgaria, and Holland and Spain are also in detention. Meanwhile, Israeli Immigration Service spokesman Sabine Haddad told AFP that Israel on Monday deported 23 pro-Palestinian activists who were taken into custody. There are 58 remaining, she said, in Israeli custody.
Now, why would they be remaining there? Why don't they just...
Why don't they just get rid of them? Yeah, I just let them go. It's unbelievable.
Horrible
it's
people.
Just freaking unbelievable people. Goddamn Israelis, something else. I wanted to, there was another article I wanted to read tonight regarding, let's see.
Four U.S. nationals held in Egypt, military sources said.
Witnesses said some of the Americans detained were seen taking pictures while others were taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's...
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about.
They're probably CIA people.
Mm-hmm.
July, the Egyptian demonstrators in Suez Canal, city of Suez, detained four U.S. nationals and an Egyptian translator on Monday and handed them over to the military police. Military sources said they said the military police were questioning the four to find out if they were in the Suez Canal area. There was something here. I wanted...
beef contaminated with cesium sold at market.
Yeah, that's in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on one second here. Where are we? All right. Hang on one second. I'm going to... Baby products, toxic flame retardant chemicals, contain toxic flame retardant chemicals.
Yeah.
You want to read that?
Sure.
That was interesting.
Potentially toxic flame retardant, many of them containing compounds known as pentabromiated diphenyl ethers, are common components of many household products containing polyurethane foam. Originally intended to increase product safety by decreasing fire risk, these compounds have come under increasing scrutiny since the early 1990s due to the growing evidence of their damaging health effects. But even though these chemicals have been banned in 172 countries and 12 U.S. states, they continue to make their way into a wide variety of products found in U.S. households, including toys and upholstered furniture. In an especially disconcerting study conducted earlier this year, researchers at Duke University found that the potentially toxic flame retardants were found in 80% of samples of polyurethane foam collected from baby products, commonly and legally sold in the U.S. Samples were taken from car seats, high chairs, strollers, nursing pillows, and bassinet mattresses. The results of the study were published in 2011 by the American Chemical Society Journal Environmental Science and Technology and suggest that additional research is warranted to specifically measure infants' exposure to these flame retardants from intimate contact with these products and to determine if there are any associated health concerns.
Pentabromide diphenyl ethers, also known as PBDEs, are known to bioaccumulate in fatty tissue, breast milk, and blood after being inhaled or ingested with food. So these things you can smell. You know, any new products, you can smell that stuff. The highest and most dangerous concentrations of ingestible and inhalable PBDEs occur in plants that repair and recycle products containing these chemicals, and also in domestic environments, since they persistently show up in household products containing polyurethane. You know?
I'm just going to see if I can get to this other website. It might be up. Go ahead.
All right. Okay, recent studies show that the U.S. blood concentrations of PBDEs are much higher in children than in adults, and these chemicals are known to have damaging effects on the nervous system development and can also disrupt the function of estrogen and thyroid hormones. When children are exposed to these chemicals early in life, either through inhalation or ingestion with breast milk, their damaging effects have been known to persist into adulthood and may include reduced performance on intelligence tests and behavioral changes like hyperactivity.
Wow.
Yeah. The Duke University study suggests that even though the manufacture and distribution of PBDEs is subject to increasing restrictions in the U.S. and Europe, these dangerous flame retardants are still finding their way into our homes and the body tissues of developing infants. It may be wise to check labels carefully and investigate PBDE levels before exposing children to polyurethane foam products. And, you got it. Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
so you can probably go up to that.
Yeah.
One.
So, well, actually, no. Hang on a second, because I want to. Let me go here. What I wanted to do is let's go to a quick music break.
Okay.
And then I want to try to get this article on Medicare.
All right.
All right, and we'll be right back after the song.
So what are you going to bring for their listening pleasure?
I don't know. Let's see, I've got a pretty good selection here. Let's see. I think I'd like to play All Is Not Lost. What do you think?
Okay, good
it's
choice.
It's a nice song.
Hmm.
So I'll play that, and we'll be right back after this.
Government money. and they do that by increasing costs to consumers and providing a disincentive to use medical services. Lieberwurm et al. Want to create a single deductible of $550 for all Medicare services, replacing the separate hospital deductible this year of $1,132 and the separate Medicare deductible of $162. They also want to cap out-of-pocket spending for people with low to middle incomes at $7,500. And who has that much money? Those with higher incomes would have to pay more out-of-pocket in a further effort to means test the program. There's already some means testing in Medicare, but Lieberman's proposal would add more. For example, under his plan, people with incomes of $85,000 would have to pay $12,500 out of pocket, or about 15% of their income, before collecting benefits. Experts have long feared that as those with higher incomes pay more, they will lose their support for the program and opt out for private market coverage, thus weakening Medicare's risk pool, which makes it possible to insure sick people in their old age. Baker says a lower combined deductible is not a good idea. It would raise out-of-pocket costs for millions of beneficiaries who don't use hospital services during the year, but nearly all seniors go to the doctor, often several times a year, and Lieberman's plan would require them to pay a $550 deductible instead of the $162 deductible they pay now for physician services. Under current law, they also pay 20% of the bills for doctor services, but Medigap policies, the popular ones at least, cover that amount.
That brings up another goal of Lieberman's plan, to reduce the amount of coverage Medigap insurance can provide. His plan would forbid Medigap policies, imagine that, which are owned by some 10 million seniors, from paying that deductible. All Medigap policies now cover the hospital deduction, and two of them, Plan F and C, cover the medical deductible. Two-thirds of seniors who have Medigap buy these plans because they want to reduce their risk out-of-pocket expenses. And over the last few years, under the guise of consumer choice, Congress has authorized insurers to sell new Medigap plans that cost less but don't cover as many of the holes. Guess what? Older people don't seem to buy them. Seniors are very risk-averse, and says Bonnie Burns, a policy specialist with California Health Advocate. It's worth noting that Congress also pulled a fast one during the health reform debate. It slipped into the law a provision that will make seniors who buy Plan C and F assume more cost of their medical services. The law calls on the National Association of Insurance Commissioners to draft rules that would make seniors who choose Plan C and F pay a greater percentage of the Part B coinsurance. For example, instead of policies paying the entire 20% coinsurance, as they now do, they may cover only a fraction of it. The campaign desk has repeatedly noted that the polls have been eager to promote this. But there has been little press interest, too. Under Lieberman's bill, Medigap policies would cover only half of a senior's out-of-pocket cost up to $7,500. And in other words, they would have to pay $3,750 right off the bat before any insurance would be allowed to kick in. That sucks. And if they have an existing Medigap plan that does pay for those costs, the government would slap them with an excise tax. One couple I know now pays $3,720 for two Medigap policies that covers each of them and pays for everything. They would have to pay the tax, drop their policies, and each cough up the first $3,750 to pay expenses, plus a premium of the new policy and a higher Medicare premium for Part B, which covers doctor services and hospital outpatient care. Lieberman's plan would raise that too. Making people pay a lot more is precisely what Lieberman and other polls want. He cites studies showing that when people have to pay more for their care, they will use less of it, and claims his proposal will reduce the debt and save more than $600 billion over 10 years. In his press release, he says, "We can only save Medicare if we change it. Our plan contains some strong medicine, but that's what it will take to keep Medicare alive." You know, and what will it take to keep seniors alive? That's a good question for the press to explore. Half have annual incomes under $22,000, and the median income for older women on Social Security is only about $15,000. A recent RAND study, also missed by the press, found consumers with high deductible insurance and lots of cost sharing did economize on going to the doctors, even for preventative care coverage by their policies. So it's like, you know, guys, this is really
he's a horrible man.
Yeah.
Horrible.
And the rest of the article just states that this is a perverse effect, says Burns. The older you are, the more likely you'll pay those high out-of-pocket expenses. They would hit women the hardest and shift more of them into Medicaid. Given that the states are having trouble paying for Medicaid and their talk of cutting the Fed's contribution through block grants, it's fair to ask how will these women pay for their care. It's also fair to ask how they will pay for it if proposed changes in Social Security cost of living formula, now discussed as part of the deficit reduction packages, becomes law. COLA changes are likely to result in smaller increases for many, and folks, this is really about the kitchen table connection. So, you know, up yours, Lieberman. May you rot in hell.
He really deserves to be there.
And may you be rotting in hell the rest of your miserable life.
Anything that he's done in the last...
He's a schmuck. He's a horrible man. Horrible individual. You know, he's just a Zionist prick insurance...
Corporatist.
You know, corporatist, absolutely.
I am so
disgusted and embarrassed that he represents our state.
I'm surprised he didn't run for president again so he could create that scam for himself and pocket more money.
You know, I've never voted for that guy since he's been in office.
I never have. Never once have I voted for him. Not that it's made any difference because he gets elected.
He keeps getting elected because every asshole in the state wants him, you know, likes him. You know, every
they don't realize what he is.
Well, every Jew and every Republican in the state likes this prick, okay? And all he is a prick. All right, so I don't know.
I think he's elected by Zionist money outside of Connecticut.
Oh, he definitely is. There's no question about that. But at the same time, you know, he's a prick. And always was and always will be. Here's another prick that has to be mentioned tonight.
This is the guy that infuriates.
Zbigniew Brzezinski, 40 years ago, wrote a highly controlled...
Controversial book.
Highly controlled future system. Wrote about a highly controlled future society where the population would be subjugated to technocratic elite. Appears on MSNBC Morning Joe yesterday to predict that middle-class unrest caused by economic disenfranchisement would soon hit America. You got to listen to this, folks. This is another horrible person.
This
is the guy who predicted this and wanted this to happen, all right? And here's the guy, you know, and now he's saying, oh, we got to watch for it because it's going to happen, you know?
Well, he made it happen.
How income disparity can lead to unrest. Listen to the prick himself. This is Zbigniew Brzezinski, father of Mika Brzezinski, the morning whore. All right, listen to this one.
Welcome back to Morning Joe, 35.
Maybe it's been canceled.
Let's see.
I don't know. For some reason, it's not playing. Had a little problem here. All right. Let's read this here. I don't want to be a prophet of doom, he says. And I don't think we are approaching doom.
Here it is.
Well, maybe.
Unable to connect. We can't get a lot of these videos.
No, it's not that. That's not that. It's a damn pop-up that came in. There we go.
There it is.
Yeah. It's 11 minutes long. Easy.
Let's play a little bit of it anyway, just to see.
Yeah. Okay. But let me just say, I don't. This is what he says. Some forms of radical. But I think... I don't think we are approaching doom, but I think we're going to slide into an intensified social conflict, social hostility, some forms of radicalism. There is just going to be a sense that this is not a just society, Brzezinski said, adding that civil unrest would begin where the lower middle class becomes severely affected by the economic fallout. Let's see what the jerk says.
Five past the hour, joining us now from Washington, former National Security Advisor for President Carter, Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski. Hi, Dad. Good morning.
Hi, Dad. Good morning.
So to start off this conversation, we've had a lot of segments this week about the disparity of pay in our society. CEO salaries are up. Corporate profits are up. Bonuses are back. And we've been looking today a lot at the political fight in Washington, and Republicans saying they won't budge on any sort of tax revenue enhancer in any way. If they win this, does that feed into the overall concern you have about the disparity in our society that's growing?
Oh, absolutely. It seems to me that if America were really expanding economically, becoming wealthier, more productive, more innovative, that kind of disparity would be more or less palatable. But when you have stagnation, when you have rather severe case of unemployment, the sense of social injustice can be terribly demoralizing and politically, in the long run, very dangerous. It can politicize socioeconomic issues, create...
Oh, for God's sake. Anyway. What he says is, he said, the former national security predicted really serious international turmoil as a result of the United States, Europe, and Japan, the three traditional pillars of global economic strength, struggling with deep financial crises. CFR member Brzezinski, also a Council of Foreign Relations, if anybody realizes, a member of Brzezinski's so-called concern about disparity in a fair society as the rich get richer and the middle class become poorer, is completely hypocritical given the fact that he wrote books four decades ago virtually advocating precisely that system where a tiny elite ruthlessly control and dominate the rest of humanity. However, this is certainly not the first time that Brzezinski has expressed concern that a growing rage caused by economic and social disenfranchisement could threaten the existing power structure. During a Council on Foreign Relations speech in Montreal last year, Brzezinski, a regular attendee of the elitist Bilderberg Group meeting, warned of a global political awakening, mainly comprising of
younger
people in developing states that threatened to topple the existing international order. He stated that for the first time in human history, almost all of humanity is politically activated, politically conscious, and politically interactive. The resulting global political activism is generating a surge in the quest for personal dignity, cultural respect, and economic opportunity in a world painfully scarred by memories of centuries-long alien, colonial, or imperial domination, Brzezinski told fellow elitists. And he also stated, this is not in this article, but he also stated, it's much easier to kill a million people than it is to control them.
Yeah.
Right.
Such a movement only represents a threat to the power monopoly of the privileged circles in which Brzezinski moves. One can only conclude that he was decrying this development as one of the chief architects of the existing global hierarchy, to which he also made reference in his speech. Brzezinski himself is under direct threat, as is the continuing ability of the global elite in general to control world affairs, a point he again touches upon in this MSNBC interview. Mankind is now politically awakening and stirring, said Brzezinski during last year's speech, adding that in this combination with the fractured elite make it a much more difficult context for any major power, including currently the leading world power, the United States. Since Brzezinski is a proponent of highly controlled society run by technocrats, the prospect of an angry middle class rising to challenge the target of their rage is not something to be welcomed in the eyes of the elite. In his 1970 book, Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, Brzezinski wrote the following. The technotronic era involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values. Soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance on every citizen and maintain up-to-date complete files containing even the most personal information about the citizens. These files would be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities. Does this sound like a man who would express sympathy for an economically deprived underclass, as Brzezinski feigns during the MSNBC interview? Or is this man petrified that the New World Order he helped build is becoming more vulnerable to collapse, even as it tightens the screws on increasingly aware, angry, and desperate population?
Right. And you know what's funny, too, is I'll tell you the truth. We have that technology today, and they're using it, Facebook and Twitter and all these damn things. But he can't control it. They cannot control that, okay, because that's what causes the revolutions. That's what's causing these things.
You got out of control.
They don't have enough people. You'd have to have a billion people controlling 7 billion people in order to, checking everybody's Facebook and everybody's emails and everybody's everything. And it's an impossible figure. I mean, people don't even realize that the FBI, one of the whistleblowers, Sybil Edmonds, who was a translator for the FBI during the 911 crisis, before 911, during 911, stated that there are only like 5 people in the entire FBI who could speak Farsi. All right.
I remember that. Now that
and they were so far backlogged on emails and everything else. And they were like 3 or 4 years behind. All right, even back then. And now, I mean, with the explosion of technology and explosion of these of
they social, can't track
there's
everybody.
No way in hell that they can track this stuff. They may think you can, all right, but they can't, all right. So what they're doing is they think they're tightening up and feeling up little girls and feeling up little boys at the TSA, at airports, all right, to tighten their security because they can't do crap with breaking the internet, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just impossible for them to do that, all right? All this stuff is out there, and all these people are out there, and never before in the world has there ever been this kind of pressure, put on a society, politically or political awareness, all right? So, this is that was by Paul Watson again, but I thought it was a great article.
I'm sorry we couldn't hear the audio part.
Who cares? The guy's a croaker, I can't stand the guy. It's kind of like listening to Liebeworm talk,
Yeah.
Yeah. This one is really interesting, too, I thought.
We just have about 3 minutes.
The multi-billion dollar terrorists and the disappearing middle class. The U.S. government, White House, and Congress spend $10 billion a month or $120 billion a year to fight estimated 50 to 75 Al Qaeda types in Afghanistan.
Yeah, we read this.
Did we read that? Yeah, according to
that
the CIA.
That was an excellent article.
Yeah, I mean, it was just absurd. Yeah, just totally absurd what's happening here. And, marijuana activist Roger Christie has been locked in a prison for 1 year with no bail and no trial. Okay.
Where is that? Where has he been put in jail?
Let's see. With no bail, no trial. Let's see. Can you imagine facing a gang of weapon-toting thugs who kicked in your door, point rifles to you, and desecrate your home and church? What if they dragged you away and locked you in a cage? What if they declared that you are a danger to society based solely on a totally safe, life-giving, non-toxic plant that your body needs and thrives on? What if your captors were the federal government and you were locked in a cage, a prison with barbed wire called a threat to society solely for this plant? Think this scenario could not happen in America? Think again. Marijuana activist Roger Christie is being held in a federal prison since July 8, 2010, with no bail and no trial. This pastor of the THC ministry has been declared a danger to society by the judge. Roger Christie, Aaron Zeman, and 12 others are facing prison because of pot politics. Roger Christie, leader of the Hawaii Cannabis Ministry, is a longtime marijuana activist. For over 15 years, he has been active in reforming marijuana laws in Hawaii. In the 90s, Christie worked to end the harassment of personal growers. In 2006, both Roger Christie, Aaron Zeman, and others fell short of the needed signatures to get a lower police priority initiative on the ballot. They failed to gain enough signatures, but they did attract the attention of federal authorities. And the feds placed wiretaps on Roger's church, home and cell phone lines to gather evidence on his ministry's daily operations. Roger and others were instrumental in getting a lowest law enforcement priority cannabis ordinance passed by 34,957 votes on November 5, 2008. Law enforcement could then be freed to deal with dangerous issues instead of going after marijuana users. Today, July 8, 2011, marks the one-year anniversary where Roger Christie sits in a federal prison, being held without bail for being a danger to society for marijuana-related charges. And Roger's had a multiple bail hearing. All attempts to have Roger released before his trial have failed. And what about the 13 others arrested with Roger? Many are facing mandatory minimum prison sentences of 5 to 10 years for minor amounts of marijuana. How? The federal government has charged them with conspiracy. That means they work together to provide for each other and share their collective cultivation efforts. All 14 are charged with conspiracy to manufacture, distribute, and possess with intent to distribute 284 marijuana plants, which carries a mandatory minimum prison term of 5 years and a maximum of 40 years. Several homes are at risk of being lost in asset forfeiture proceedings, and many other people, including Aaron Zeman, below, did not have or possess any marijuana plants during the raids. Address to write to Roger Christie. Freedom isn't free. Please write Roger Christie, number 99279-022, FDC, Honolulu, Federal Detention Center, P.O. Box 30080, Honolulu, HI 96820. Held without bail, political prisoner, American citizen, locked up for a safe, non-toxic plant. He was an instrumental in getting a lowest priority police priority initiative in Hawaii. We will take the time to let Roger know he is not forgotten and that we still care. July 8th marks the anniversary of Roger being held with no bail, no
trial. They must have used the Patriot bill to.
Sure they did. And I highly recommend you go to this and check it out.
Well, we're right to the end of our time.
Yeah.
And I hope people...
Also, if you're interested, it's on my Facebook page under Leo Steele. You can check that out. So that whole article.
I hope people found the articles interesting. There certainly were a group of very different articles.
It was fun. So I want to thank everybody for joining us. The show's pretty much done, not streaming anymore. But hang on 1 second here. Let me go to the
Twitter.
Wait a second. Yeah, I can go back to. Where's the? Oops, that's not it. I have to go back.
Right here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wanted to mention that tune in tomorrow night when we have our guest Jeffrey Goodman, author of The Comets of God, and Friday night we have a continued show with Ross Hamilton, the author of The Serpent Mounds and Tradition of Giants, and it's a continuation of last Friday's show. I think you'll really enjoy it. So tune us in tomorrow night at 8 o'clock for Jeffrey Goodman, and we talk about the Comets of God, and George Dixon will be joining us as well. And Friday night with Ross Hamilton, author of Serpent Mounds and the Tradition of Giants, and we'll also be joined by George Dixon. So keep that in mind and tune us in. And good night.